Okay, good evening, everyone. Tonight is the night you've all been waiting for, besides Leah and Ruchama being here, because we're going to talk about ovens and microwaves and all those fun things. So, I'm going to play 20 questions on the topic of Zaya. So, the first question is, what is Zaya? Oh, Leah and Ruchama, what is Zaya? Oh boy, okay, that's right. So Leah and Ruchama are right. Zaya is steam. So in our context, the idea is as follows. The question is, if I go ahead and I cook a pot of milk, so from that pot of milk, steam will rise. What is the halachic status of that steam? Does that steam have the status of milk, such that if, for example, it touched something on top of it, let's imagine you put a fleishig pot cover on a milchig pot and cooked milk, the pot cover will become fleishig, or no, maybe the milk didn't touch the fleishig pot cover, so there would be no problem with basar b'chol. That's the question. How do we know, or do we know, that zeya has the halachic status of that which is its source? When something emits a zeya, if it's milchix, the zeya is milchix. If it's fleishix, the zeya is fleishix. If it's not kosher, then the zeya isn't kosher. So the truth is that this question isn't actually clear or stated explicitly anywhere. However, the Rush was machmir. The Rush in the Tshuva was asked this question. He says, yes, zeya that comes from milk is like milk. Now, why would that be? So the Rush proves it from a Mishnah in Machshirin. When it comes to Tumah, we say that Zaya coming from something Tameh is Tameh. So presumably, Zaya that comes from milk will also be milchix. Another proof that this is true is brought by the Gra. The Gra says that the Gemara tells us that if you cover a pot, so then we assume that the taste goes all over the place. Or says, for example, let's say a drop of milk falls on a piece of meat. So if the meat is outside of the pot, not submerged, so then we'll assume it stays there. But if the pot is covered, so then we assume that everything spread throughout. What's causing that? It must be the zeya. So from here we see that the zeya of milk is milchix, the zay of meat is fleishix, and the like. Does everyone agree to that? The truth is that there is an opinion that disagrees. The Mishkanos Yaakov holds that it's not true, that zay is water vapor. Water vapor isn't milchix, it isn't fleishix, it's water vapor. Aye, what about the Mishnah Machshirin? You can't prove anything from Tum and Tahara. Tum and Tahara, even by touching something, it becomes tameh. For kashrus, there needs to be absorption, it needs to be more significant. What about the halacha that if you cover the pot, everything gets mixed in? It's also not a raya. Maybe that's because of what Rashi says, when you cover a pot, everything bubbles up inside of it. But the zeh itself is irrelevant. So how do we paskin? So we are machmir. We follow the view of the Rush. We treat zeh coming from milk as milchix, zeh coming from meat as fleishix. Sometimes, perhaps, we'll throw in the Mishkanos Yaakov as a sniff lahakel if there are other factors, but we assume that that zeya coming from milk is milchix and the like. So that was question number one, and the answer is that zeya, we assume, has the halachic status of its source. Okay. Question number two. Does zeya go is zeya relevant if it can escape? So perhaps the only time we have to be concerned with zeya is like the example that I stated, where you put a fleishig pot cover on top of a pot boiling milk. In that case, there's nowhere for the zeya to escape, so it's certainly going to be hit the top of the pot cover, and the pot cover will then absorb the milk, and it's already absorbed meat, so now your pot cover will be basar b'chalav, and that could perhaps then go and asur the food. We'll talk about that. But if there's room for the zeya to escape, then perhaps there's no concern. It just dissipates. The case of the rush, where the rush, we said the rush is the source for this chumrah, the case of the rush is a case where, wrong jacket. The case of the rush is a case where there is no room for the zayah to escape. But let's say there is room for the zayah to escape. Maybe there's never any concern. So if you take a look at the Bach thinks that, in fact, we could be lenient. The only time you would have to be concerned with zayah is if you're an enclosed area where the zayah can't escape. But if the zayah could escape, then it will dissipate. There will be no problems. However, the Ramah quotes a Trumas HaDeshen that seems to be machmir. The Trumas HaDeshen was asked the following question. People like to dry salamis, right? So where are you going to dry your salami? You'll hang your salami to dry on top of your stove. But now you have a problem, because let's say you cook milk on your stove, and hanging on top of your stove is your salami that you're drying. Does that make your salami not kosher? So the Trumas HaDeshen says it's okay, and the reason is because it doesn't reach Yad Soled Espo, meaning to say that the salamis are hung high enough above the pots that the zeyah isn't Yad Soled Espo, the salamis do not reach Yad Soled Espo, and therefore there could be no possible absorption. Just like if you throw cold milk onto a salami, the salami remains kosher. You just wash off your salami. So too, if the steam, when it reaches the salami, isn't hot, and the salami itself isn't hot, there'd be no problem. But what do you see? You see that if it was hot enough, there would be a problem. Now, aren't we dealing there with the case of an open area? And still there is a concern. So from here, the Bach says, you see that at least the Trumas HaDeshen, which is cited by the Ramah, holds that if the Zeyah, even if there is room for it to dissipate, as long as heat is still a factor, it's usher. So from here we see that Zeyah is a problem even when there is room for it to dissipate. However, since this chumrah is not clear, in other words, you could have logically thought that as long as there's room for it to dissipate, there's no problem. So if it's a safek, we're lenient. That's the view of the Bach. It's quoted by Reb Kiv Eger and the like. So I'll give you an example question. Somebody just asked me this a couple of days ago. They went ahead and they were ladling soup. It was par of soup with a par of ladle into a bowl that had cheese or milk or the like. So they were concerned that the soup, which was hot, went into the bowl, it heated up the milk, and then went right back up into the spoon, to the ladle, which would make their pot of ladle milchix. That was their question. Now, there might be other grounds for leniency, klisheni and the like, but one reason why I said you could be lenient is, I said, was the steam, well, if you're uncertain whether the steam or the ladle were Yad Soled Espo, now in this case the ladle was, we'll talk about that in a couple minutes, but if there's a suffix in terms of Yad Soled Espo, then maybe there's okay. There are other tzadim l'hakel in that case, we'll get to those as well, but if there's some type of suffix, some type of additional suffix, like let's say you don't know whether it was Yad Soled Espo or not, so then you could be makel if it's in an open area, there's room for the steam to dissipate. Now this is relevant, for example, if you have, do I have to worry about zeyah in the case of the cabinets above my stove? Right? I have cabinets above my stove. Probably you're not supposed to do that. But in Washington Heights, we're not so machbit about things like that. So now I have cabinets above my stove. So maybe I should be concerned that when I cook something milchix, the steam goes up. And then when I cook something fleishix, the steam goes up to the cabinets, hits the cabinets, and then will somehow go back down and asser up my food. We'll talk about whether steam goes down also. We'll get to that in a moment. But let's assume for a moment that there is a concern that steam goes two ways. So do I have to worry about that? So the answer probably is no. Because the steam that's emitted from the pots, by the time it reaches the cabinets well above my stove, is not yadso lattice bow. And it's not hot enough to make the cabinets, the bottom of the cabinets, yadso lattice bow. So there's no concern, there's no absorption. And even if it gets a little grimy, but at least if there's no concern that it's going to go up and then drip back down and the like, so it should be okay. Was that your question? Yeah, yeah. How is it lolosif? Even directly over it, we're not sure why it should be a problem. But certainly if it's elsewhere in the kitchen. Okay. Okay, good. So that was question two. What's the halacha if it's in an open area? And the answer is we're machmir as long as heat is still a concern. But if it's a safek, we're meikel. We'll give all sorts of practical examples shortly. Yeah. Yadso lattice bow means hot enough for absorption to take place. And literally it means that when you touch it, it's so hot that your hand recoils. Now, how hot is that? It's a machlokas. Some poskim say 120 degrees. The most machmir poskim say about 110 degrees, maybe even a little bit less. But if it's not 110 degrees, then there's no absorption at all. That's even if you poured hot water on something or the like. Okay. Question number three. Does Zeya go up and then back down or just up? Meaning to say, the case where the rush, which is again the source for all of this, was machmir, was a case where you cooked something milchix under something fleishix. So there we say the milchix food, the milchix steam goes up, hits the fleishix thing, and makes it asar. Right? So if you had two pots on top of each other, let's even assume they're not directly on top of each other, but there's a gap. But not a huge gap. There's a gap. The bottom pot you're cooking milchix, the top pot you're cooking fleishix. And the steam from the milchik pot hits the fleishik pot, so now the fleishik pot is basar b'chalav. Good. That's what the Rush said. What about the milchik pot? So the Rush doesn't say anything about the milchik pot. The implication seems to be that the milchik pot's okay. Steam goes up. Doesn't go up and back down. That's the impression you get from the Rush. That's the impression that you get from the Shulchan Aruch. However, the Ramah seems to be machmir about this. He writes, Im afu, this is in Simen Kufches Sif Aleph. Im afu wotzalu iser vehatar tachas machvas achas, megulin, asur afilu bediaved, vuadin, im afu bechiagavna pasim basar, asur alchlo bechalav. Aval bezecharze in lachosh. Ella im kain, hizia hamachvas mishnehem. De'az, aser afilu bezachar zeh, im hayu shnehem megulin. De'have kikisui shel kedera. In this case, the Ramah says, not only is it aser if you have, let's say, if the two uncovered pots below are being cooked simultaneously, but even bezachar zeh, so let's say, you cooked in a milchik oven, sounds like. You cooked milchiks in an oven. Now, we'll have to decide if our ovens are relevant to this, but let's take, you cook milchiks in an oven, and then you cook fleishiks in the oven. If it's hizia mishnehem, im hizia mishnehem, they're both going to be, or the second one would be aser, right? So what do you see? You see, presumably what happened was, when you cooked the milchix steam went up, and it made the oven milchix. And then, when you cooked fleishix again, subsequently, so now, somehow or another, the milchix oven makes my fleishix open pot asar. Now, how exactly does it do it? How does it do that? So, it's not clear how it happens, And the truth is that there are three possible theories, and we'll talk about which one we accept. Theory number one is our only concern is drops. This is what's going to happen. You first cooked milchik in the oven, right? So the milchik steam went and hit the roof of the oven. So that steam was absorbed into the roof of the oven. Now the roof of the oven is milchik, right? They're blios of chalav. Now you subsequently cook fleishiks in it. What happens is that the fleishik steam goes to the top of the oven. It condenses, forms drops. Those drops now have absorbed milk in them, because remember, the roof of the oven was balua b'chalav, that had absorbed the taste of chalav, and they fall back down into the fleishig pot, and bada bing, bada bang, you trafed up your fleishig dish. You have bas b'chalav. That's one way. And I think everybody would agree that if that happens, it would be usur. Do you have to be concerned that happens? That's something we'll have to talk about. But if it did happen, that should surely be usur. So concern number one is it's not that the second pot becomes usur directly from zeya. Rather, the zeya causes liquid to condense that drip back down into the pot, and that makes it usur. It doesn't quite sound that way from the Raman Simen Tzadi Gimel. And that's what leads to concern number two, which is Zeya goes in both directions. What does that mean, Zeya goes in both directions? Again, when you first cooked the milchig pot in the oven, so that made the roof of the oven absorbed with tam chalav, right? Now, what happens the next time is the Zeya goes up, it hits it. The Zeya itself absorbs the tam chalav, right? And then goes back down. It bounces off the roof of the oven and goes back down into my open fleishig pot. And now, basically, there's milk, or tam of chalav, entering my fleishig pot. Even if there isn't actually any drops that form on the top. Simply, the zeya goes up, it absorbs tam chalav, goes back down, and asers the meat. So obviously, that will be a bigger stringency, because even if you're not concerned with actual droplets, let's say you assume that in an oven, the heat is such that droplets don't actually form on top there. But still, now potentially we would have a problem, right? It goes up and back down. The third possible explanation is the most machmir. And this maintains, this view holds, that the chibur, the zeya serves as a chibur between the upper and the lower thing. What do I mean the zeya serves as a chibur? It's as though they're connected. Maybe two things that are connected by zeya is as though they're touching. It's as though they're attached. And therefore, since the roof of the oven and the contents of my fleishig pot are connected via zeya, so the zeya connects them. It's as though they're mechubarin. It's as though they're connected. And since the roof of my oven is milchik and the contents of my pot are fleishiks, so then the milchik oven trafes up my pot. So which opinion do we hold? Like, we already said it sounds like we're not mako for the first opinion. Even without droplets, sounds like we'd have to be machmir. Question is, do we hold of option two or option one? So most poskim seem only be concerned with option two, not with, the question is, do we hold of option two or option three? Most poskim seem not to be concerned with option three. There is a Magen Avram, as explained by the Machlis HaShekel, who seems to be concerned about three, at least in one of his answers. But the Pashup Shot is we only hold of option two, which again means that our concern is that the Zeya can go up from the pot, hit the roof of the oven, and then bounce back down into the pot. Now, we will see then how this plays itself out in our ovens. But you'll see why this is very important, because if there is insufficient steam to go back up and then bounce back down, or there is sufficient steam but also plenty of ventilation such that the steam would never bounce back down, but would simply leave, so then there would be no problem. Meaning to say, if the only reason why the bottom thing becomes asur is because we're afraid that the steam hits the roof and bounces back down, so then we'll surely have to be machmir in a situation like a milchik pot being covered with a fleishig lid, right? Because there's nowhere for the steam to escape, so it goes back up and bounces back down and goes back up and bounces back down. It's under pressure. But if you're dealing with a bigger area where there's also some type of ventilation, the question is going to be, do we have to be concerned of the zeh going up, down, and back down? And one reason why you might not have to be concerned is because it's simply unrealistic for it to happen, right? Let's say I'm cooking milchiks in an oven that was used for fleishiks. So the milchik food will not become asur unless the steam from the milk hits the roof of the oven and then bounces back down. Because you see, I don't really care if the roof of my oven is basar b'chalav. Let's say I use the same oven for milchiks and fleishiks, then milchiks and fleishiks and milchiks and fleishiks. And let's say each time there's steam that's emitted, first from the milchiks, then from the fleishiks, then from the milchiks. So it's true, the roof of my oven will now have absorbed milk, meat, milk, meat, milk, meat. Good, so the roof of my oven is treif. But I don't put food on the roof of my oven. And I never will. So therefore, I don't care if the roof of the oven is basar b'chalav. My concern is only that the food that I cook in the oven is kosher. So if the food that I cook in the oven is covered, then again, there's nothing to worry about because there's going to be no zeya that escapes the cover. And even if a little bit does, so it's certainly not going to be able to go reach the top of the oven, bounce back down, and enter my covered pot. So if it's covered, I have nothing to worry about. But if it's uncovered, so then the question is there a practical concern that my milchik food in the oven is going to emit steam, it's going to hit the top of the oven, bounce back down, and enter into my milchik food, thereby making my milchik food asur? Or will I say no? Since the oven is large and ventilated, and anyway there's not that much steam, because when you cook things uncovered there's not too much steam. Steam is much more significant when things are covered because of the pressure. So then, there's no concern that the steam is going to leave, hit the top of the oven, bounce back down, and asur my food. That's going to be the question. Okay, so we're going to, in terms of the practical halachos of ovens, we'll return to that, but just to set up the question, you can now see why it's not going to be so simple to say that an oven via steam could actually make food asur. Okay. So that's question number three. Question number four is, what types of foods emit zeya? All foods or just liquid foods? Why would you distinguish between solid and liquid foods? So there's actually two reasons. One of them is halachic, and one of them is mitziuti, is grounded in the reality. So the halachic distinction can be found in the Prima Gadim. Without going into details, the Prima Gadim tries to make the argument that only zeya of mashkin, only zeya of liquids, have the halachic status of the source, but not zeya, not steam emitted from solids. Steam emitted from solids does not have the status of the source. So if you had a piece of meat, you're roasting meat, even though that meat might emit some steam. Now, scientifically, we know that's because even solid foods have water within them, and that water, when heated, will condense and the like. Like, what does it mean when you have a liquid turn into a gas? I'll tell you, tell me later. You're on vacation, so you don't have to know this stuff anymore. So anyhow, even though scientifically we'll tell you that's what happens, but halachically it's not true. Halachically, milk that's a liquid, so the steam has a status of milk. But meat that's a solid, its steam doesn't. That's the Prima Gadim's distinction. I think there's a raya from the Rama that we don't hold to that distinction. That distinction is not correct lahalacha. But there's another possible distinction which we might accept lahalacha. This could also be found in the Ramah, in the Dark Emotion, Simon Kuf Ches, and it's the ruling of Rav Moshe. I think it's rooted in the Gemara Zvachan, Tzadi Heimad Beis, among other places. And that is that we are not concerned that solids will emit enough steam, at least when they're uncovered, for there to be a concern of Zaya, certainly with respect to going two ways and ossering that which is on bottom. What does that mean? That means that, let's say, I go ahead and have a treifafen, even. We'll make it even worse. Treifafen. And I go ahead and I roast a steak in the treifafen. So steaks are solid. Let's assume for now there's no liquid, right? So now, there's no concern. Min hastam, we will not assume. If it happened, so there would be a problem. If we knew that this was a steak, this particular steak emitted a lot of steam, so fine, then you would have an issue. But we will not assume that a solid, like a piece of meat, will emit enough steam to go up and then come back down and osser the steak. So therefore, I'm roasting this steak in a kosher pan in a totally treif oven. Do I have to be concerned that the steak emitted steam, the steam went up, hit the roof of the oven, went back down, and made the steak usher? So Rav Moshe says, no. There's no such concern. Solids do not emit enough steam for that to be a problem. Liquids might, and therefore we have to presume that they do. Solids, if they did, it would be a concern, but you don't have to assume that that's what happened. Because usually, it's not going to be the case. Typically, solids do not emit enough steam for this to be a problem. Okay. So that means, practically, if you follow this view, that, let's say, and again, we're going to get into the details of this in just a couple of minutes, but to set up the question, let's say my oven is fleishiks, meaning to say I cook fleishiks things uncovered, liquids, and solids. And now I want to cook something that's milchiks in the oven. So if I cover it, so that's certainly no problem. But even if it's uncovered, it won't be a problem. Why? Because a liquid, a milchik solid will not emit enough steam to for there to be a problem. For the steam to go up, become usser, go back down. Yeah. It's a good question. Anything that... Oh, so what you're saying is an excellent, excellent point. Rav Moshe holds, not only do we assume there's not enough steam to go both ways, but we assume there's not even enough steam to go up and oster the roof of the oven. Because you're right. If there was enough steam to make the roof of the oven milchiks, then when I did fleishiks uncovered liquid the next time, it would be a problem, right? So Rav Moshe says we assume, we could presume that min hastam, generally, without knowing otherwise, if you're baking or roasting something solid, there's not enough steam for us to presume that there's going to be a zeya that will cause any problems. Good. So now, this brings up to question 5, which is what constitutes a liquid and what constitutes a solid, right? There are all sorts of things in between. Okay, I know that a pot of milk is going to be liquid, and I know that a dry roasted steak will be a solid. But what about sort of things that are in between? There are lots of things in between. Let's say, for example, I designate my oven, again, within Rav Moshe's view. We'll talk about the other views later. There are those that are more machmir than Rav Moshe, and there are those that are more mekel than Rav Moshe. But let's follow Rav Moshe's view for the moment, that we only assume that there's a problem of Zeya with respect to liquids, not solids. So let's say I designate my oven as fleishiks. I always cook things as fleishiks. Makes more sense for me to designate my oven as fleishiks because I bake fleishig things more than I bake milchig things. Good. So now I want to know, can I make pizza in my oven, uncovered? Is pizza liquid or solid? What do you think? Sorry? You're saying it's a liquid. Why? Because it's tomato sauce. Ah. And the cheese gets very liquidy, right? Okay. So that's not a bad argument. Rav Moshe does not give us definitive guidelines as to how to define a liquid or a solid. But Rabbi Willig thinks that if we follow Rav Moshe's view, and Rav Willig thinks that you can follow Rav Moshe's view, pizza is a solid. Liquid means a real liquid, something that you pour. The fact is, Rabbi Willig points out, if you look at a pizza in an oven, you will not see a great deal of steam coming out from it, even though there is some tomato sauce, even though the cheese might be soft. No, liquid means liquid. Okay, good. Well, what about if there's a little actual accumulation of liquid? Let's say I want to make lasagna. And everybody knows that when you make lasagna, I'm not talking about the lasagna where you take the shortcut and you don't cook the noodles first, then it's full of water. That would definitely be considered a liquid, right? But like the old-fashioned way lasagna, you go ahead, you cook the noodles in a pot, you make your lasagna. But you want to put spinach and zucchini in your lasagna. And everybody knows that when you put vegetables in lasagna, at the end when you're done, like you could probably pour out liquid. Right? It doesn't get totally absorbed. It releases, the vegetables release liquid, and my lasagna is full of cheese. So is that a liquid or a solid? What do you think? Nope, solid. Rabbi Willig thinks that too is a solid. Ah, a little bit of liquid that's in a lasagna, that's not a problem. Now, hasha da'asas lahachi, so we're in very good shape. Why? Because what types of things would you ever cook in an oven? Let's assume you designate as fleishigs, which is the more common designation. You could go both ways, but let's say you designate as fleishigs. So what types of milchig things will you ever cook in your oven uncovered that are a liquid? It's not like if you want to make hot cocoa, you're going to put the pot of milk in your oven. So what do you cook in your oven, milchigs that you want to cook uncovered? Lasagna, mac and cheese, pizza, all of them are solids. So what milchigs thing would you ever cook that might be a liquid? I'm sorry? I can't hear. Cheese, solid. It's still solid. Liquid is a liquid. So cheesecake. That's the biggest question. Chick cheesecake. So when you start off cooking a cheesecake, it's, at least some of the time, probably it depends exactly on the recipe you use, but in any cheesecakes, it's a liquid batter. It's really, you could pour it. You pour it into the pot. So it's like thick milk. It's more liquidy than sour cream. So what's the halacha there? So I have a friend who asked Rabbi Willig this question. He said, "Hi, is cheesecake a liquid or a solid according to you?" So he was with the Rebbetzin. So he said, "Rebbetzin, how do you make cheesecake? Because cheesecake apparently you do want to cook uncovered." So she said, "Oh, I cover it with a piece of aluminum foil for the first couple minutes, and then it's sufficiently solid that I take it off, and it's okay." So he was concerned. I don't know if he was 100% sure that maybe cheesecake in its initial state is pretty liquidy, so therefore better to just put a piece of aluminum foil on top of it. And then after, I don't know how long cheesecake cooks for, but let's say it cooks for 40 minutes, bakes for 40 minutes. So for 20 minutes, have the aluminum foil on. After 20 minutes, it'll be sufficiently solid that he wasn't concerned. You take it off and it'll be nice and brown and toasty on top because it's baked uncovered in your fleishigs oven. So that being the case, practically speaking, if you follow Rav Moshe's view, almost anything that you'd want to cook milchiks uncovered in your fleischig's oven will be doable. Now, let me note for now, and I'm not going to go into the details of this. We'll do it when you get closer to Pesach. Rav Moshe is more machmir about this when it comes to Pesach. Pesach, we're much more machmir. It's an Isser Karis, it's an Isser Mashu, and the like. You could have said, according to Rav Moshe, I don't have to kasher my oven for Pesach, and I'll just only do solid foods uncovered. Right? Shouldn't be a problem. What am I worried about? So in theory, that's right, but we have various chumras for Pesach, so we're more machmir. And when it comes closer to Pesach, we'll talk about kashering your oven for Pesach. But at least when it comes to basar v'chalav, that's what he thought. Okay, great. Now, question number six. How hot does the steam need to be? We already saw the Trumas Hadashen. Trumas Hadashen said, if you have salamis hanging on top of your stove and you cook milk in your stove, the salamis are okay. If it's not hot enough. Now, if what isn't hot enough? So this is a very interesting question. It could mean one of two things. Do we say that it means if the steam isn't hot enough? Or do we say that it means if the salami doesn't get hot, isn't hot enough? Let's say the steam is yad so lettuce bow, but the salami isn't yad so lettuce bow. Now you'll say, well, when does this question come up? I would never hang my salamis over my stove. I definitely don't recommend it. Okay, it's actually a very common question. When is it a common question for a microwave? How so? Let's say the steam emitted from foods in the microwave when it hits the roof of the microwave is yad so lettuce bow. It's hard to measure yad so lettuce bow when it comes to steam. It's not easy. But for example, if you go ahead and you make yourself a hot cup of tea, and then you put your hand right above that cup, within a couple of seconds it will be too hot, and you will not be able to keep your hand there. Now, how exactly you measure it, I'm not quite sure, but it's clear that steam can be quite hot. So let's say the steam coming out from the things you cook in your microwave, let's say you're doing milchiks, let's say you heated up a cup of coffee with milk, so that steam is milchiks. And the steam that's emitted is yad so lettuce bow. But it doesn't make the roof of the microwave yad so lettuce bow. How could you tell? Go ahead and do the following experiment. Cook something in a microwave for a long time, or boil water for a long time. Put in a cup of water and microwave it on high for 10 minutes. It'll be boiling away. And as soon as you turn it off, open the door, feel the roof of the microwave. Put your hand out there and press. And you press as hard as you can for 2 minutes. And you're not yad so lettuce bow. It's not so hot. Right? There's a shayla yad so lettuce bow. L'chumra l'kula. But let's say you know that the roof of your microwave does not reach yad so lettuce bow, despite the steam being yad so lettuce bow. And this is common. It's going to depend on how well your microwave is ventilated. Most microwaves that I have tested are not, the roof of the microwave does not reach yad so lettuce bow, including the two microwaves we have at home. If that's right, you might not need two microwaves, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So the steam, the roof of the microwave never reaches yad so lettuce bow. Is there a concern? What do you think? Should there be a concern in that case? But the roof, you see, never reaches yad so lettuce bow.
Not the roof necessarily, but whatever blios are in the roof, but it's still yad so lettuce
bow. How, the blios in the roof are hotter than the roof?
If your roof is made of plastic and there's condensation on the roof, then yeah.
The condensation
of the last thing you cooked
was yad so lettuce bow. But the roof itself could never have absorbed, let's assume that we're talking about a clean microwave between milchiks and fleischiks, right? There's not remaining condensation. You're right, that would be a problem. But there's no condensation. I cook milchiks, and now I check, my microwave's clean, free of any condensation, now I want to cook fleischiks. So practically you're saying there should be no concern then. Right. So this is a debate among the poskim. It goes back to the Achronim. It's also a debate among the contemporary sources. Might even be late Rishonim Machlokes. Rabbi Willig told me that about 30 years ago, he and Rabbi J. David Bleich were young rabbis at the time, and they were having an RCA convention in Toronto. So they said, too many old people, old rabbis are participating in these conventions, we're going to send young people. So they sent Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Bleich to have a question and answer session. So 30 years ago was when microwaves were first starting to become popular, and people started to know about them. And so they were asked about this question. So Willig thought, he thinks it's okay. If, in fact, the roof of the microwave does not reach Yadso Lettuce Bow, I don't care if the Zeh is Yadso Lettuce Bow, because we know that there's never absorption any time into anything if it's not Yadso Lettuce Bow. And the truth is that the Lashon of the Truma Sedeshin, that's a source for this whole thing, sounds that way. He says, that means if the upper pot, or in this case the roof of the microwave, isn't Yadso Lettuce Bow, it's okay, even if the Zeya is. However, the Shulchan Aruch didn't sound that way, because the Shulchan Aruch says it's only Mutter in Hayad to let his Bezeya. And that's the way Rabbi Bleich ruled. So according to Rabbi Bleich, the microwave would be much more of an issue, because the Zeya might be out to let his poem. According to Rabbi Willig, assuming things are clean, the microwave is going to be much less of a question, because assuming for a moment that the roof of your microwave does not reach Yad to let his poem. And as I said, the Rayos Lakanu Lakan, I won't get into the details now, but this question is going to be very relevant for microwaves. So we're going to get to the practical of microwaves and ovens in just a minute, but that's going to be one of the issues. Yes?
Is it possible for the steam to hit that and bounce off of you?
So, no, because if... assuming everything is dry and clean. Dry means to say that there's no spill. So the halacha is, ein valua yotze below rotev. So let's assume that the bottom, my microwave tray, is full of milchig blios. Right? And now I put a fleshig bowl of chicken soup in it. Is there any way for the milchig blios in a microwave tray to enter the fleshig bowl that's directly on top of it? No, unless there's rotev. So if my chicken soup spills, then I'm in big trouble. But if my chicken soup doesn't spill, then I should be okay. So conceivably that could be a problem. We'll return to that question. It's an excellent point. In other words, maybe microwaves are going to be much worse than ovens because, as we'll see, A, there's more Zeh in microwaves. That's because of the way microwaves heat things. I used to think, though I think I'm wrong now, that they heated it by heating the liquid in the food. But whatever it is, microwaves, the way in which they heat does cause more Zeh. You'll see it in salads. If you microwave a potato, like to make a baked potato in a microwave, right when you take it out, you'll see that there's much more steam coming out of a baked potato in a microwave than there, even though it's a salad, than there is in a potato baked in the oven. And B, it's smaller, perhaps not as well ventilated and the like. So therefore, what you're arguing is that there should be much more of a problem. It's an excellent question. When we get to the practical question section of this year, we will return to it. Okay. Question number 7. Now we'll finally get to the practical section. So, ovens. How do we treat ovens? So, theoretically, you could be mako based off of one of two grounds. And to be machmir, you have to be reject both of these. Number one is you think there isn't sufficient steam. And number two, you think that there is sufficient ventilation. So, there are differences among the poskim. The Aruch HaShulchan seems to be lenient, but that might only be in a case where the oven is totally open. So, bottom line among the contemporary poskim, what's the halacha about an oven? So they fall into three groups. Group number one is the most lenient group. Most lenient group among the poskim that endorse this view is Rav Schechter, Shlita, Rav Gifter Zatzal. They felt that there's no problem at all with ovens. You could use your oven not at the same time, obviously, but zeh har zeh, or milchiks, fleishiks, no matter what. Why? What about the rush and zeyah? No, the type of zeyah that the rush was concerned about is a thick steam. It's hevel. It's a type of steam that you see if you cover a pot, and then you uncover the pot, poof, big, thick steam emerges. But the type of steam that exists in an oven because of its size and the ventilation and the lack of air pressure and the like is insufficient to cause any halachic problems. So, no problem. Milchiks, fleishiks, milchiks, fleishiks. That's the most lenient view. Yes? Sorry? Don't have to wait, don't have to cover, don't have to kasher, don't have to do anything. If, obviously, let's say some fleishik food drips onto the tray and onto the racks, and there's be'en, right? There's actually some meat. And then you cook milchiks, or the opposite. Some cheese drips onto the rack, and then you put a fleishik pot on top of that rack. So that would be a problem, because then food gets absorbed. We're not talking about that. We're talking about concerns relating to zeah, or recha, or the like. Let's assume the racks are clean. If the racks are clean, no problem whatsoever. Okay, that's view number one. The most lenient view. The middle view is Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe, as we mentioned before, says, among others based off of the Shach, that we're not going to be totally makel. Why? Because the Shach writes with respect to Zeah, to Recha, and certainly Zeah, that a Pesach Katan min Hatzad is not Matir l'chatchila. Meaning to say, the type of ventilation that is in our ovens is insufficient to totally be meiko, and therefore there is still a concern for Zeah. There's insufficient ventilation. However, at the same time, he also assumes, like we said, that we don't assume that there is Zeah for solids, only for liquids. So therefore, what can't you do? You can't cook something fleishiks liquid uncovered, then milchiks liquid uncovered, then fleishiks liquid uncovered, then milchiks liquid uncovered. That would be awesome. At least l'chatchila. But if you're dealing with solids, there's no problem. So practically speaking, what should you do if you follow Rav Moshe's view? You should designate your oven as one or the other. Designate it as milchiks or fleishiks. Let's say you designate it as fleishiks. So then you never have to worry about cooking fleishiks. Cook fleishiks to your heart's content, uncovered, no problem. When I want to cook milchiks, so then it depends. If we're dealing with a solid, then I could also cook it uncovered. If you're dealing with a liquid, then you should cover it. What's a liquid and what's a solid? That's what we explained. Liquid means really a liquid. At least that's Rav Willig's understanding of Rav Moshe. Now again, if you're going to be doing this, so then practically speaking, you should be careful that your racks are clean, because as we said, if the racks are dirty, if there's mamashos on the racks, this is a problem, at least edible mamashos. If there's some mamashos that once spilled and is now burnt to a crisp such that it's not edible, so then that wouldn't be a problem. But if there's any edible mamashos, that's a problem, so double check to make sure there's no mamashos. Or if you're nervous, you could put a piece of aluminum foil underneath your pan, and that would solve that problem, and then you would be okay. So that's the middle view of Rav Moshe. I see there's some questions. Let me just do the third opinion, then we'll say the bottom line, and then I'll take the questions. The most machmir view could be found in, among others, the Minchas Yitzchak, the Badei Shulchan Simen Sadi Beis, and they are concerned about any usage of the oven for milchiks and fleishiks, the same oven. You need to have two ovens. What's the concern? Number one, Zeya. They think that we are concerned with Zeya for solids. Number two, the Zeya creates mamashos that might drip down after being moistened from the Zeya. In other words, if you touch the top of your oven, it will be grimy. And besides the Zeya, there is mamashos, things splatter and the like. And number three, their concern is the racks. And even though we said, Ein b'lo yotze b'lo rotev, maybe you shouldn't rely on that l'chatchila. So if you follow this most machmir view, could you just say, well, I'll cover it? So there's a Ramah that says, l'chatchila, we don't rely on covering. The Badei Shulchan says, well, if it's solid, then l'chatchila, you could rely on covering. Because anyway, Rav Moshe is makel by solid, even uncovered. So I'm machmir by solids, but I'll say, solids covered are okay. You could argue, certainly if you hold like Rav Moshe, that maybe even liquids you could cover l'chatchila, because there are so many concerns that it's very unlikely that there's actually going to be a problem. I'll just bring you two interesting points. Last week we did the sugya of Recha. And one of the interesting things you see, in the whole sugya of Recha, everybody was talking about roasting things together, roasting kosher together with treis and the like, and everybody was only concerned with Recha. There was no concern about Zeya. So it really sounds like Zeya is not a problem in the stam. Now you'll say, maybe that's solids. Maybe, but at the very least we could prove that solids is no problem. The Gemara over there talked about when you cook in the same oven kosher and treif, right? Or one person's Karban Pesach and another's. And the Gemara's only concern is Recha. And if you overcome the issue of Recha, it's fine. Or if you think Recha lav milsa, it's fine. There's no, seem to be no concern about Zeya. Okay. So, another thing is that even when liquids are in an oven, you do not see much Zeya. It's not like a pot cover. Somebody once did an experiment. It's brought down in a Sefer, excellent Sefer on these halachos called Megillah Sefer. That they took a pot of water and they boiled it out in an oven until there was none left. And there was never a time where there was very much visible steam. It also happens to be that things don't even usually boil in an oven. Like you'd think if you put a pot of water in an oven at 350, so it would certainly boil because boiling temperature is 212. Turns out it usually won't. Why that is interesting, but not for now. So, that being the case, based off of all these stadim, so I'm certainly not here to be a machriya bein hagdolim. There were great people, there are great people in all who endorse all three opinions, but my personal practice is to follow Rav Moshe's view, the middle view, the view of Rav Willig, and the like, and not to cook milchiks that are liquids, but to cook milchiks that are solids in a fleishig oven. Again, making sure that there's no problem with mamashas on the racks. You know, if one day I'm in a situation, if you can if you have a big kitchen, this isn't really shayach in the heights, but you have a big kitchen and you have a lot of money and you could afford to have two ovens, so maybe it makes sense to do it. It's a good, might be a good investment. It's not a crazy chumrah, but when you live here in the heights, and that's not really something that's feasible, so we certainly follow the view of Rav Moshe. Okay, we'll get on to microwaves next, but let me take the oven questions. Yeah. Right. I would think you should be machmir in that case, both for Recha and usual Zeya, and also, because usually there's going to be a Recha issue, as we talked about last week. Though maybe that's mitigated if there are walls around the pot, but yes, I would think you should. Now, there's a different question, which is, does that actually make your challah aser? Because you're not supposed to make fleishig bread. think about that a little more. But I would think that you shouldn't. That you should not bake challah at the same time as cooking a liquid fleishiks in the oven. Let's say chicken with gravy on the bottom. So chicken with gravy on the bottom, there is a fair accumulation of liquid. So according to Moshe, that would be a problem. And if you cook challah at the same time, then we would treat that as fleishik challah. So l'chatchila, we don't want to make fleishik challah. Either it would make the challah aser b'diavad. They're probably studying l'haka, Rav Moshe himself cites them. But l'chatchila, I would think that you shouldn't cook them at the same time. Yes. So you're asking cupcake batter. That are really milchiks? Yeah. It's hard to know. For some reason, Rabbi Willig thought that cake batter was not a liquid. And I asked him why, and he said, because you don't see any steam. But he was, or at least his Rebbe said, was concerned about cheesecake. I don't know what the difference is. I would think that for cake batter that has real milchiks in it, like you put milk, one of the ingredients, and it's like cake batter that really pours like a liquid, maybe it makes sense to be machmir. So you should cover it. Now, even the poskim that are machmir, among the poskim that are machmir, they do allow for you to kosher the oven in between. Even though, generally speaking, we'll talk about this when we get to the laws of kosher, we don't kosher from milchiks to fleishiks and fleishiks to milchiks. That's a minug. And here, since there are other tzadim lahakel, plus maybe that minug was only stated for things that people have multiples of, like milchik silverware and fleishik silverware, but not ovens where generally people only have one. So you could kosher in between. Some adopt a middle view that they will be machmir on an oven if it was used within 24 hours. So they won't use the same oven for milchiks and fleishiks, but they will, even without koshering, with waiting in between. How do you kosher? So again, even though many poskim are machmir that you need libun gamor, like self-cleaning for koshering, talk about that later, they're makil that libun kal works for this. First of all, it's hetera bala. Second of all, as we said, it's a chumra. So if one wanted to do the following, in that case, it would be okay. Let's say you really wanted to cook your milchik muffins, right? And you want to keep, but you treat your oven as fleishiks. But you can't cover the muffins because you can't cover muffins when they're cooked, when they're baking. So what would you do? So kosher your oven, run it on high for this week could be mako for a half hour, certainly an hour, and then you could do it, and then when it's done, do it again, and then bring it back to your fleishiks. Yeah, I think that would be okay. All right. What about microwaves? So as we mentioned before, microwaves are better and worse. Why are they worse? Because A, there's more steam. B, it's smaller. C, the ventilation might not be as great. On the other hand, it might be more calm. Why? As we said, that the roof of the microwave might not be ad soledis bo, and therefore there might be zero absorption. When it comes to the oven, the roof of the oven, is definitely ad soledis bo. When it comes to the microwave, the roof of the microwave is oftentimes not yad soledis bo. So therefore, it might be more kal. So what are the views of the poskim? So as I mentioned, Rabbi Bleich is machmir, because he's concerned that the zeh itself is yad soledis bo. Rabbi Willig is meikel, because he thinks that the roof of the oven, microwave oven, doesn't reach yad soledis bo. Assuming it doesn't, check if you want to be sure. Assuming everything is clean, it wouldn't be a problem. I looked at some of the contemporary kashrus websites and svarim. I was curious what they say. So if you look at the Star K website, they ask the following question. Answer the following question. Are you allowed to use an office microwave? An office microwave, so you never know what was in it. Right? Not a Jewish office. So they say that you can, so you could definitely always use it if you covered, if you certainly if you double cover. Now, if you want to double cover, all you would need to do, certainly in my opinion, is it's not that hard. Let's say you have it in a container, right? You bring your container of noodles from home. So what you could do is the following. First of all, you don't have to seal the container. If you do, it will explode anyway. It'll pop open. Keep it covered, but like open the lid a little bit so that way it's covered, but the air can escape as it expands. And then you put it in a plastic bag. And that's okay. And then when you're done, you throw out the plastic bag, but your container is kosher and your food is still kosher. I think that's enough. And that's the easiest way to use a treif microwave. The Star case says, though, you could even do it uncovered in a treif microwave, assuming the following three conditions are met. Number one, the microwave, the ceiling, floor, and doors and walls are completely clean of food particles, spills, and residues. Number two, no non-kosher food is being microwaved in the microwave at the same time. Number three, the floor of the turntable is covered or the food is placed on a thick plate, because the plate is definitely treif. Now, the truth is you shouldn't really have to worry about the plate, certainly not b'dieved, and maybe, according to emotion, not even l'chatchila, if nothing spills. But you never know, something might spill in the microwave. So they say, so take, you could even do it uncovered if you just take a thick paper plate and put it on top, put it on bottom, right? And again, that's because they're following, I assume, Rabbi Willig's Mahalich and not Rabbi Bleich's. If you look at Rabbi, the art scroll, Hochos Kashrut Sefer, written by Rabbi Forst on page 233, he has a psak I didn't understand, but he says that when you're cooking milchiks and fleishiks, they should be well covered, but when you're cooking pariv, let's say at home, we're talking about a kosher microwave, it could be lightly covered, not totally uncovered, because he's still concerned about Zeya going up from the fleishiks, hitting the rooftop and going back down, but light, it's okay. Now, I don't understand exactly what his concern. Why would the top be fleishiks if you always cook fleishiks covered? And if the top of the microwave is pariv, then you shouldn't need to cover pariv at all. And if it's meat, so then why would lightly covering the pariv be enough? And why is that sufficient for pariv, but not sufficient for dairy? So I don't know what he's concerned about. I didn't understand the logic. I guess he holds that where choshesh it might happen, but pariv you could be more makel because of not barnat. I'm not sure. I saw in the OU, so they are very machmir. They're concerned that even if it's covered, there's a concern that steam will escape and drip down back onto the food. So they write, to use the office microwave, one must double wrap the food. The wrappings don't have to be airtight, as I mentioned. The food should be covered on all sides in a manner that A, does not allow it to come in contact with the walls or floor of the microwave, B, does not allow any condensation that forms on the ceilings of the microwave to drip down into the food, and that's sufficient. So it could be lightly covered. So even though I think that, so again, that's basically following Rabbi Bleich's shita. Now, practically speaking, I think when you're dealing with a treif microwave, you should follow that view, even if you're going to theoretically hold of the lenient view, because you're not going to, every time you want to microwave something in your office, start going around and checking and making, is it really so clean, and the like. You're going to do like bedikas chametz every time you want to use the microwave. So the best thing to do is to just cover it. But as I said, it's very easy to cover it, because it doesn't have to be a super duper covering. You just take the bag that you use to bring your lunch to work in, and you put the container in that bag, and the container is closed, but not super sealed. The bag is closed, but there's room in the bag to expand, so that won't pop. And then it's okay. Okay. Two more quick points, but let me... Any microwave questions? No. Okay. What about spice shakers? So some are machmir for spice shakers because they're concerned with zeya. So you could offer the following tzad lahakel. First of all, in this case, there's makom for the zeya to be mispashet, right? It's not in an enclosed area at all when you put spices in. And even if there is a problem, so let's say you're putting pepper into your pot, right? So let's imagine that you are concerned that the fleishik pot, the steam went into the pepper container. Now the pepper is fleishik, and then if you put it into the same pepper into something milchik, it would be a problem. So that tiny amount on the surface will be batel in the rest of the container of pepper. I don't think it's likely to happen, because like we said, it's open. It's oftentimes not going to be yad so lettuce in the area that you're in, the steam, because if it was, your hand will get burnt. And we always have the bach to be so mechan and the safek and the like. So that's why many poskim are makel. You do not need separate spices. And certainly when you're just talking about spicing at a table, that will be okay. You know, if you have kids around and you're concerned that they're going to like put the spices into the food, so that's a different story. But there's only adults around, so I would think the pashup shot is that you don't need separate spices. But there are machmirim. The Badi Yisholchan Siman Tzadi Beis Sifkat and Kuf Samachay thinks that you should be machmir. And he has an interesting chumra. I didn't quite understand that even if it's enayad to let us bow, because it's going to, actual mamashis is going to get in. Somehow or another, he seems to see steam in a very actualized way. But I think the pashup shot is lahakel. Okay, yeah. So an urn. Okay, so an urn is an interesting question. If you have to be concerned that the steam from the urn, in other words, like this. I think the pashup shot is that in an office setting, you could be mako. And the reason is twofold. Number one, 99% of the things used in this urn are going to be kosher anyway. So it's true, there might be occasionally things that are actually not kosher, like really not kosher. I don't know, let's say some type of instant soups that, let's assume they have real meat in them or something like that. So, but the chances, but it's in a totally open area, right? And you don't have it, it's not clear that it's even yad so lettuce bow. Certainly, according to Rabbi Willig, it could be okay, because the spout of the urn is not yad so lettuce bow. Maybe the zeya is, so it's a suffix. So we said in a suffix, in an open area, you could be mako. Would it be better maybe not to put it right up to the urn to leave some? Yeah, I guess it's probably, if you could do that, it's a little better. But other than that, I think there is room to be mako for the urn case. All right.